Welcome to Love at First Science, the podcast designed to dig deep into neuroscience, the human body, and anatomy. My name is Celeste. I'm a physio and I teach anatomy to yoga teachers. And this podcast is an archive of the lessons I've learned along the way in my attempt to bring a more science-based approach into the yoga world. Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. Just a quick reminder that I don't run any ads, so this podcast can only grow with your support. If you learned something new that you found useful, please do rate and review the podcast. And if you think the content can help someone get out of pain, improve their life, move without injuries, or even just feel more inspired, please share it with them. It would mean the absolute world to me, and you never know, we just might help elevate our community along the way. What's up, everyone? Today, we're going to be talking to Dr. Muksha Chauhan. She is one of the few physical therapists in the United States that can not only flash her orthopedic degree, but she's also trained in women's health. And this is what makes her such an amazing person to talk to, because she understands the body like very few people do. I'm a huge fan of her content on Instagram because she speaks so much sense. And I'm just excited that she gets to give her perspective on the whole core situation. You know me, I'm always harping on about the fact that we shouldn't grip the core. And I like to bring in people that are highly trained to really give their perspective as to why this is the future for us in the way we move our bodies. So guys, enjoy. This is Muksha. This episode has been broken up into two parts, and this is your part one. I have been extremely excited about recording for an extraordinarily long period of time. We've got Dr. Muksha Chauhan. Thank you so much for being on Love at First Science.
Thank you, Celeste. I'm so glad to be here.
It's so good to connect with you. We were just having a little chinwag before we hit record. We both got like mutual fangirl going on. but like from the moment I discovered your content, I was like, wow. Like, I truly believe you're not given the credit you fully deserve, because what you share is so valuable. And if people took the time to actually just pause and absorb what you've got to say, it would make their day, life, body improve dramatically.
Yeah, and I got a lot to say. So I'm so thankful that you are actually taking the time to read my posts, because nobody does that these days.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big problem all of us content creators face, because, but can I just give a little shout out to all the podcast listeners out there? Because you guys are not the norm. People are normally like want like 30-second bite-sized chunks of information. You guys are in for the hour, the half hours. I just have so much respect for my podcast listeners. And I wanted to bring you on to share you with all of them, because not only are you a women's health physical therapist, which is one of the reasons I'm bringing you on the show today, but you've also trained in orthopedics, which gives you this totally unique way of looking at the human body. And so, Muksha, give us a quick rundown of your story and how you got to where you are.
So I have been a physical therapist for 15 years. I started with orthopedics, and then part personal story, personal experience, patient experience and encouragement from my mentors, I decided to venture into the world of pelvic health. I was quite fascinated, and the story is a little bit, I was seeing a patient with hip issue and with all kinds of things, exercises, manipulations, mobilization, she was not getting better. So I started asking her questions about sexual health, about her bladder health, and she herself was a nurse practitioner, so she started to think about all the questions that I asked, and I was like, wow, I didn't even think about, yes, I do have a little incontinence, I do have some pain with intercourse, but I didn't put these two together. So I sent her to a pelvic health specialist, and she wrote to me 30 days later, or I don't know, a few weeks later, that she was all better. And I was so excited. Wow. I did a little dance, and I decided to learn more about pelvic health. And I have never looked back. I think it was just a missing link in my practice. And it just kind of provides this connection. And that's my Instagram handle. That's why the pelvic connection, because it's like sitting right in the center of the body, connects the upper body with the lower body. And then the whole connection of diaphragm and the pelvic floor, it's just mind-blowing and so fascinating for me to learn. And it's just, I'm still learning, and every day there is a new thing which fascinates me and blows my mind. So here I am.
I think I had goosebumps about three times while you were talking. And I mean, one of the things you said was like, you know, it's so fascinating and it's this middle part of the body. It connects the upper and the lower half. And let's not even get into the whole topic of how we're taught to shame this part of our body. There's this huge psychosomatic connection that I think is a big part of the conversation. And part of that shame lens that I wanted to view today's chat through is how we've been taught since we're teenagers to always grip our pelvic floor up tight because otherwise we're considered weak, or to squeeze our navel into our bellies. And I have been interviewing many, many people on the topic, and I very regularly share high-level evidence about why we shouldn't do this. And yet still, many people unfollow me if I talk about the fact that we should allow the core to move with the diaphragm. And I get a lot of hate. And I'm like, why is this so difficult for people?
Yeah.
It's just, why is it so hard for people to just not say, engage your core for a full 60-minute class? Can we please just get some support with this book?
Honestly, when you first reached out and said that you wanted to talk about core, I was slightly confused. I was like, people are still cueing that? Like, is it still happening?
Yes, it's still a big thing. And for you pelvic health physios, you're like, what? Yeah. But in the exercise world, the yoga world, and let me be honest, there's even physical therapists in the yoga world who are still drumming the same rhythm.
Yeah, it's really confusing. And if someone knows how the diaphragm works and how pelvic floor works with it, it takes 30 seconds to break that old habit. Even if you have been cueing a certain way, it just doesn't make sense to cue the core or pelvic floor to grip. Or, I mean, I do understand, like, you know, and I think we're going to talk about it more, if someone has been injured or has been lying in bed for a very long time or just had birth and had like six finger big diastasis and they have no awareness of exactly where their core is, we do use sometimes certain cues like, hey, let's just first feel how these muscles even work or feel in your body. So we may sometimes say, like, you know, we have a lot of cues like and There are enough studies that shows that transverse abdominis, which is the deepest core muscle, works with the pelvic floor. So I have used cues to like gently bring the two, the ASIS and the bring the bones kind of gently together. Imagine a tension wire between those bones and feel that they are kind of pulling towards each other. And simultaneously, there is like a tampon in the pelvic, in your vagina, and you're pulling it up. And for males, just like pull the nuts to guts. And like these kind of cues we work because some pelvic floor could irradiate into the weak transverse abdominis. And sometimes transverse abdominis irradiate into the weak pelvic floor and they work together. So just to kind of give the awareness, but we never, the body doesn't work like this. You shouldn't be thinking about what's happening. The things should happen automatically. And that's the place where we want to go to with different kind of practices, different exercises, increasing the complexity of different tasks. So you don't have to think when you're turning and picking up things from the floor or running to catch the bus or like doing these day-to-day activities. You're not going to be thinking about, oh, let me first do this, zip my core and pelvic floor and then do these things. And if that's how you're doing it, I don't consider you healthy. Then you're not, your body.
Yeah, that's dysfunctional.
Healthy.
That is dysfunctional. Yes. And I almost welled up with tears when you said, you know, if we're having to think about it all the time, that's probably not quite right. Because it's almost like if you tell someone this, I get so much hate on social media for this. If you tell someone, do you know what? Actually, your brain should be doing it automatically. I get this, like these long messages of people who are like showing me all these quote unquote examples as to why it's important that people should always consciously engage. And I'm like, of course, there's always going to be, as you mentioned, some exception to the rule, but we want to try and get them out of that habit as quickly as possible. So it's
absolutely
for sure a starting point,
but
definitely not the finish line. And something that I'm sure you've observed in clinic, it'll be great to hear your experience of clinic.
Yeah.
is that these even high-level athletes will be using these gripping strategies to do something extraordinarily basic, like pick a pencil up from the floor, when really those powerful gripping strategies should be used when you're moving masses far outside of your capabilities.
Yes, totally. Yeah, there's a common joke in our pelvic physio world that, oh, if you're seeing like a bodybuilder or an athlete, and they're like, oh, I have a very strong core, and you know, you can't really move me. And it's just like, make them stand and just give them a little perturbation, and they're not going to be able to balance themselves because they're always gripping, and there is no resilience in the body. It's the system is so rigid that it cannot take the, yes, of course, like, you know, if they do certain activity that they have been training for, maybe they will be far better than other average individual, because it's, they have figured it out, like their system is very, work in a very synchronized way. But day-to-day activities can really break their body apart, and they come to the physios and like, okay, we're hurting here and we're hurting there, and you look at them and like, you look so strong, how did you hurt yourself? So yeah, it's exactly these things. The core is, as we call, they are the tonic muscles, which are slow twitch muscle fibers, are supposed to work continuously at a low grade, and they're activated in an automatic manner. The phasic muscles, or the global muscles, which are our big limb muscles, they are supposed to work you know, voluntarily. Like biceps is a phasic muscle. The biceps is not working when we are kind of just sitting there, but our pelvic floor, our core is always, it always has some tension in it because it's supporting our posture. It's supporting our different organ systems.
Yeah, I always love the explanation that I was taught once, that our Julie Weeb, I don't know if you know her, but she's a pioneer in this in the whole field of core activation, and I have so much respect for her. Big shout out to Julie, who taught me this phrase where she said, "Your core muscles never relax because they are postural muscles, but they do eccentrically load, and concentrically." And for anyone who's listening who's still learning those advanced phrases, quote unquote advanced, depending on where you're at with your journey, it just means that for a muscle to lengthen but still be under tension. So it's like if you're doing a bicep curl but lowering the bicep to the floor, that's your eccentric phase. Your concentric would be lifting the bicep towards you. And so, yeah, you just said it so perfectly. These muscles are not ever relaxing, but they do need to move.
They need to move. And excursion, this is a thing that we say, like for pelvic floor muscles especially, excursion is everything. If you can contract, fine. You can relax, okay. But can you eccentrically load? Can it lengthen? The muscle can lengthen while it's getting loaded, you know? So it's so important. And the excursion kind of goes along with the diaphragmatic movement as well. As we are inhaling, the diaphragm expands and lowers down. And then the abdominal contents kind of go down because the diaphragm is coming from top, and that pressure needs to go somewhere, and that pressure gets accepted. Load acceptance is done by the pelvic floor when it eccentrically descends slowly downward. So this excursion is super important. And it's the same thing with your abdominal muscles as well. Like, if you are constantly gripping, we are also fatiguing the muscle. It's not going to be able to do its job well. You know, if we keep making it work, like, it doesn't need to tense all the time, and it creates a lot of other problems. And, you know, that I see in the clinic, and, you know, people think pelvic organ prolapse is something that only happens to women when they go through childbirth or pregnancy, because the pressure is too much in the abdominal region and the pelvic floor muscles are tight. No, I have seen so many people who have never been pregnant with rectal prolapse. This is one of the things that happens a lot, because they have always learned to clench their abdominals. So the abdominal pressure is always high, which also reduces their digestive ability, So they can be constipated because of that. They always feel bloated. And then when they go to the bathroom, they're always straining, closing the glottis, meaning they're holding the breath, and then they strain as hard as they can. And that it's a different kind of prolapse as opposed to what we see in after childbirth, because of pregnancy and growing size of the fetus and then vaginal delivery, the pelvic organs kind of descend downward. But in people who are straining like this, the wall between the rectum and the vagina becomes thinned out, and the rectum kind of bulges into the vaginal wall. It kind of creates a little pocket where the stool kind of gets stuck.
Yeah.
And they think that they are constipated. They may be okay. And then it's likely that after all these years, they have finally let go of their abdominals finally. But then the damage has been done. Like, now they have this rectal prolapse and the stool is getting stuck there, and they still feel that they're constipated. So that's just one issue that I see a lot in people who have never been pregnant, sometimes in males as well. So it's just a clear, you know, gives me so much clarity, like, why we shouldn't be tensing our abdominals ever. And people, when they come for, you know, any constipation issue or any bowel digestion issue, the first thing I always ask them, doesn't matter how old they are, how was your childhood? Did you clench your abdominals? Did you always tense your pelvic floor? Did you always strain to go to the bathroom? These are telltale signs that, you know, where their prolapse is coming from. Yeah.
Hey, my loves, real quick, if you are hypermobile, be sure to check out my book, Too Flexible to Feel Good, where my co-author and I share the latest science on how to help a bendy body feel awesome. If you already have the book, please do leave it an Amazon review. It helps more than you could ever know, and it just might help someone else feel a bit more stable in their bodies. The book is called Too Flexible to Feel Good, and you can get it from most online retailers. The system is sorely lacking in just people just need to trust their bodies a bit more. I feel like I'm 39, right? So since I was a teenager, which is now the 90s, and, you know, we've just been taught that our bodies are weak and unresilient, and if we don't engage, we're going to hurt something. And this is the chat that I get fed when I put stuff out about relaxing the core. I get this barrage of messages of people talking about how weak we are. And actually, we're so super resilient. And it was so funny. I read this one paper where they actually asked people to grip 30% and jump from a height. And then they didn't give any instructions to another group and jump 30%. And lumbar support reduced for the people who contracted. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many studies that show that tension in the abdominals increase the loading of the lumbar spine and causes back pain. It just increased in, we don't need that much intra-abdominal pressure all the time. Like, that pressure needs to go somewhere. It will go either to your spine or to the pelvic organs. And maybe it is like, there could be another thing. It just came to my mind. It's likely that males are not as susceptible to the pelvic organ prolapse because of the shape of their pelvis. And, you know, they don't have the urogenital hiatus as females do, or people with vulva. The urogenital hiatus is basically the opening that through which the vagina comes through.
Got
so
you.
They don't have, the males don't have that. So
yeah,
this could be that this whole idea of like bracing and not having any issues could be kind of coming from the bodybuilding male patriarchal system that, oh, it's totally fine, let's just do it. And then we know that research has not been done on females as much. So we just kind of, you know, project whatever we have learned in a male body and try to translate it to a female body, but it doesn't work like that. And yes, of course, like, we see incontinence with heavyweight lifters, we see pelvic organ prolapse and different kinds of issues, pelvic pain as well. There was a trend right before the pandemic that I was seeing a ton of younger females with who would do high intensity interval training 5 times a week, and they were coming in with pelvic pain. But that's another story. But it's it's going in the same direction of clenching, tightening, tensing all the time, and all these kind of workouts going into the same direction. And I always ask these clients of mine, like, how about unloading the muscle as well? Strength training is so important, and all kinds of agility drills, everything, all kinds of exercises are important because they load our body in different ways and receptors in different ways. But do we need to keep doing the same kind of exercise all the time? Yeah. No, we need to
progress out of that
variety. Yeah. And provide the variety to the body so it can really thrive. And that's my message. That's what I tell all my patients all the time. Like, provide the variety, and that's when your body is going to be the happiest.
And just don't think about it so hard, please. Yeah. Like, just trust that your body has got this. Obviously, unless there's a dysfunction, which is obviously caused initially by overthinking, but if we can just give some better strategies. One of the things that you said was, you know, sometimes people will develop these issues because of heavy lifting. And it's so funny how people's brains will then straight away be like, oh, heavy lifting is bad. But it's just because the only strategy every single human body on the whole planet's been given is, if you don't grip the system, you're going to hurt yourself. Yes. Well, actually, if you're doing Valsalva, you should be inhaling, expanding the core. The core should actually go outwards to make that pressure system switch on, which is going to give you more strength to withstand the weight.
Yeah. No, it's such an important point. And it's good to clarify that as well, that I'm not saying that heavy weightlifting is definitely going to cause these issues. It's just how you are doing those things is important. And if you're doing only those things, your muscles need the variety. They need to learn that they can expand, they can contract, they can load under, we can also provide eccentric loading of the muscles. And that's the variety that once my patients start to do all these different kinds of things, and they are like, wow, like, we have never felt this way. And so it's the same issue, like, a runner always wants to go for running and never wants to strengthen or do yoga, or like, we're just so, and it's totally fine. Like, if you love an exercise, keep doing it, but please just maybe one more other variety of exercise, if you can include, that's just gonna, your body's gonna love it so much.
Yeah.
And that's why I love what you're doing as well, because as a yoga teacher, I always see you doing strength training, and like, okay,
all the time, babe.
Never talk about strength training. And your yoga,
it's getting a bit better. It's getting a bit better in the community. I did feel like I was very lonely for a long time. Again, I got a lot of hate. Just gonna keep flagging that. I get a lot of hate. But the good thing is, it's not like I'm getting all the love in the world now for having said this for so long. People forget where they first heard it. But I know I've been saying this for a really long time. And I've been preaching the thing of varied training like for decade. And it's like, now you see it. People are like, oh, now I'm doing hoop as well as my yoga. Or now I'm doing cross training and CrossFit. And I'm like, yes. Awesome. Just to see the change, I think for me is so... Oh, I get very happy and very excited, but it's still a long way off, because we've got these people who still believe that if they don't do just yoga, they're not spiritual, or they're not doing the right thing for their bodies, that weight training is bad or negative, which I think there were some studies that came out recently that actually explained that no one exercise is better than another, but if one was to be recommended to all people, it would be strength training with resistance. Yeah.
And strength training has like so much evidence for, you know, people going through perimenopause, menopause, like, it just changes. It's better for hormonal metabolism and, you know, strengthening the tendons and ligaments and joints, which gets deteriorated because of the lack of estrogen at that age. And also for, you know, hypermobility, which I see a lot as well in my practice. And a lot of people, it's kind of weird, like, people, we're kind of digressing, I know that, but I'll talk about this a little bit.
Please.
with hypermobility, people think that either yoga is only for flexible people, or if you are already flexible, you do not need yoga. But yoga involves a lot of weight-bearing exercises, which is so important for joint approximation and stimulating the tonic muscles in each joint and what we call the core of each joint. And people think that core is just your abdominal muscles, or maybe now they are expanding it to the pelvic floor. But each joint has their own core. For example, shoulder has its rotator cuff. Hip has its own rotator muscles that stabilizes the head of the femur and the acetabulum, the socket. So we are always strengthening the big muscles of the of any body part, like glutes and quads. Glutes actually are stabilizers of the hip, but quads and hamstrings. But we also need to stabilize these deep rotators, strengthen these deep rotators with specifically targeted exercises. But I think yoga is so good for these kind of exercises because of the joint approximation it does because of weight bearing. So it directly stimulates the stabilizers and tonic muscles in each joint. So let's not forget that core is also in each body part as well. And we have to always maintain a balance between the global and the local muscles because as we say in our physio world, proximal stability is important for distal mobility.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that last little bit because I put that actually in my book for hypermobility. And it's funny, I'm so glad you're saying all the things you did because I was reading the reviews for the book recently and a physio had told someone with EDS, oh, you cannot do a single thing in this whole book. Everything is bad for you. And I was like, we've given eye drills.
Yeah.
We've given vision and vestibular drills. Like surely we've given like basic stuff for your serratus anterior against the wall where you're not weight bearing at all. Like how could every single exercise in the whole, did you even look in the book? Like it frustrates me. And it's, so thank you for saying that because people love yoga and to hear that it's actually a good thing, no matter what body type you have, is super duper encouraging. And obviously yoga has a bit of way to go. We've got to keep adapting it. We've got to make sure it's not one size fits all, but there is a lot of good stuff in there.
I totally agree. Yeah. So one more thing I wanted to talk about when you mentioned about this topic and the way I help my patients find that automatic core engagement is by doing a lot of PNF. And PNF is for people who have not heard the term before, it's called proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. And it basically is, proprioceptive is not just what we know that, you know, the joint receptors responding to either weight bearing or movement. It could be any sensory stimulus that is produced within the body through movement. So it could be a quick stretch. It could be a slow approximation of joint when we weight bear. It could be vision. It could be a strong verbal command. It could be the head movement because it stimulates the vestibular system as well. So we're kind of targeting already established, already genetically encoded movement patterns that actually help us as babies from one milestone to the next. And so with PNF, we can actually, it's almost like what I call muscle memory resuscitation. So we may have these genetically encoded movement patterns in us, and we went through rolling to lifting our heads on prone position, then sitting, kneeling, crawling, kneeling, and then finally standing and walking. But because of injury state or any dysfunction or sedentary lifestyle, a lot of times the body forgets these movement patterns that are already embedded. And because of which sometimes the core kind of goes to sleep. It's like, I don't know where I am. And maybe these are the people who feel that they need to pre-activate or tense their core because they have forgotten, their body has forgotten this automatic core engagement. So how do we kind of remind the body to get to that point of automation that it's happening on its own? So I find PNF, I'm trained in PNF, so I use it a lot. And I think the tactile, the touch cues really help people understand exactly which body part to move. And we use a lot of gross motor patterns, meaning if you remember a baby, like, you know, when we are just like lying on the back and we are just flailing all our arms and legs, what is it actually doing? It's actually feeding the core. It's these big movements are actually tensing the abdominals. And when the abdominal muscles gain a little strength, we start to roll to the side and finally on our belly. And if you notice, if you remember, if you've ever seen a baby turning to the side, you'll see they bring their chin to their trunk, they flex their trunk, they bring their arm goes into flexion, their knee goes into knee and hip and ankle goes into flexion. Like everything, what we call a fetal position, a mass flexion pattern, they bring that to fire that core, which helps them turn, stabilizes their spine to roll to the side and then finally to their belly.
And they don't have to think about it.
They don't have to think about it. Exactly.
Dun, dun, dun.
So this is, it's just like, I absolutely love doing PNF, although it's extremely heavy, manually tiring, intensive work. But just kind of sometimes checking people, like I just like tell them like, oh, we just lie down and roll to your side. And like, oh, wow. You know, you see their strategy and there is no initiation of the core activation and they're using their big muscles all the time. And these are the big muscles which actually create more strain on the spinal segments or spinal, like the vertebral column or different joints as well. So if we can get them to a place where they can activate the core helps stabilize their system first before the big movement happens. They have to use less energy in doing so, and B, everything is going to be safe and they won't have to think about trying to protect themselves. It's just going to happen automatically. So I use, and especially it works really wonderfully for my postpartum patients, especially with big diastasis, when they cannot really feel their core at all and they're like, I don't know what's going on. So we use a lot of irradiation techniques, which is basically getting the power of their limbs, meaning hip, knee, flexor strength, which irradiates into their core. So nerves that wire together fire together. Similarly, muscles are encoded, like all the flexor muscles will work together, and all the extensor muscles will work together. So we can use all the flexor muscles to fire into the flexor core, which is the front part of like abdominals. And we can similarly, we can use the extensor muscles, which is like your glutes, your extensor of your neck, fire into the multifidus, which is the extensor of the spine and stabilizer of the vertebral column.
I am learning so much listening to you, Mukta. This is a real joy. Thank you for like just having such a brilliant way of explaining things. Like, you're so clear. One of the things that I wanted to ask you is, obviously, we're battling, we're swimming uphill, trying to get the brilliant information that's inside your head, inside other people's heads who talk about the body a lot. How can we change the culture? Like, I feel like I'm on my own sometimes.
Yeah. That's a very interesting question. And being on social media for long enough, and I think I started with, no, that's wrong, you don't do that. I think personally, I feel that's the time when I tell someone that they're wrong, is they're going to be least receptive to listening to what I have to say. So it was kind of uphill learning curve for me, like, okay, all right, people are not listening. So let me see if I can engage them in some conversation and like find out why they are doing what they are doing. So let's listen to them first. And maybe I think the biggest problem with social media is because we have such little space and such little time to explain our
something that's so complex.
Yes. So sometimes it can sound like the people are making blanket statements. And I often wonder and I often think about it that it's all about context, like why we are saying something. So
thank you for saying that. Context is everything.
Yes. So instead of like becoming so alarmed and alerted, and people don't like when their long-held belief system is questioned. So if you tell them like, no, this is wrong, and they're like, no, I have seen people improving with this and this is what works for me. We don't know if it's happening because of the confirmation bias, because we are so well trained in that one saying this thing in a specific way that people are receptive to receive that information as well. So like a lot of times when this pain science and neuroscience and all these things were new to me, and my approach of physical therapy was very biomedical in nature. Like everything is tissue related, fascia and muscle.
And then you're like, no, there's this whole brain world.
It completely shatters your like who you are. It's like an identity crisis, you know?
Big time.
So I think that could be the reason why people are not receptive for changes, because it challenges their identity, like who you are. What have you been saying so far?
It's big on the ego.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's hard.
So you have to kind of like slowly go, and you know, it has happened with me. I had to change a lot in my practice. 15 years is a long time to be working as a physical therapist. So, you know, you slowly learn and you engage people in conversation. You try to understand why they are doing it. And then you're like, okay, I understand in certain scenarios this could be okay, but let's give it a try. Let's try this new technique or the research, or like, you know, talk about research. And I think what you're doing is also very wonderful. Like, you know, train teachers so they can actually spread this information to people in general. So I think this social media has given a huge platform to people like us who can directly talk to lay people, but can also talk to teachers who are teaching in whatever capacity and strike a conversation. I think it's going to take time, but I'm already seeing a huge change happening. So we can hope for the best.
let's hope for the best. Thanks for listening. That was part one of the show. Next week, I'll be releasing part two. Remember, if this episode was helpful at all, please do share, rate, and review.